kinds of things that we want you to consider and think about and give us feedback on.
Linda, I have just one question, if I could.
Yes.
I go to a lot of meetings where people like you show up because it's almost a full-time passion to be engaged in good community process, representing your neighborhood, pitching good ideas, and that's great. But you have identified inclusiveness and equity as a key goal here, and that is a challenge. A lot of the people that you are suggesting we want to reach are people who are struggling in this economy or have families, or that the hours in which we schedule things may or may not fit with their lives, or they may not have enough information about what's going on and the like. So, you know, I think all of us as bureau heads would welcome ideas about how we do a better job. But I mean, this is a challenge because what we hear a lot of is from most people is they have no time. They're racing around. And so we can schedule it at any given time, but it still is not convenient for hardworking people struggling, you know, in this economy. So we welcome ideas about how we bring new faces into the conversation.
Yes, and I think that's what brings a number of us to the table also, is to, again, try to expand the reach that we have within city activities so that the full diversity of our city is involved in a meaningful way, and again, in ways that don't waste our time or somehow make us feel devalued from having participated in the process.
Thank you.
I heard two specific requests, and maybe mm-hmm. there were more. One was to ask staff to include a public involvement item in preparing reports to council. In addition to a fiscal impact mm-hmm. statement, there would be a public involvement statement saying what was done for public outreach and how the project was changed in response to it. Is that a request that you're making now?
Yes, we certainly had talked with folks in Commissioner Saltzman's office because you had instituted a similar idea in the past, and we know that there's a financial impact statement that's included, and that's kind of a model to draw on, but this is something that we would like to work with appropriate people to come up with a draft form for that and actually see it implemented.
A standard. And
yes.
Sometimes the answer would be not applicable if
exactly.
it's a technical thing. That
a lot of those boxes sometimes.
Exactly. So I'm very interested in getting that done. I think in the early days of neighborhood associations, that was one of the things that got things done and got respect for neighborhood associations, was that Mayor Goldschmidt and others on the council would say to people who came to the staff, what was the neighborhood input and how did you change your project in response to it? So I've been trying to ask that question myself, but it would be helpful if every time we have something on the council agenda, that is included as a matter of course. The second thing I heard you talk about was bureau advisory committees. And my understanding is that many bureaus do have bureau advisory committees that meet year-round and some do not. Is that correct?
Yes, from our knowledge, we tried to research, again, looking at what was currently in place as we began to brainstorm opportunities and possibilities with our work. And the perhaps when Jen gives her report, one of the things that we've been working on very intensively has been looking at the budget process as one of the hallmarks of public involvement for our city. And that brings into play budget advisory committees, and in some cases, those groups also serve as bureau advisory committees. So it's a.
Do you have more on that?
Yes, we have a lot on that.
Go right ahead. Thank you.
The process group did decide to take a look at the budget process because everybody who lives in or works for the city is directly impacted by the budget process. We recognize that it can take years to figure out how Portland City budget works, but given that, on the screen you can see the items, the areas that we're specifically trying to address. And to that end, we've been observing and researching and evaluating existing practices on Bureau Budget Advisory Committees. We have gone to BAC meetings. We have interviewed budget coordinators, Budget Advisory Committee members, both from the staff side and the community member side. We have gone looking at websites trying to find budget calendars and timelines where there are public meeting announcements, where there are budget documents, even draft documents, minutes from meetings. How could a citizen become informed if they chose to? And again, we recognize that bureaus don't all have the same resources or staff to put onto this process. But what we're trying to do is develop a range of best practices that bureaus could select from in order to encourage public involvement. This summer, the process group hopes to come back to council with some specific recommendations on how bureaus could be more inclusive, how they could educate members who want to be involved in the budget process, and how they can encourage community input from non-geographic communities. So coming soon in the summer.
Part of the work that the beautiful thing actually about these three different groups are that their work aligns and support each other. The community empowerment group will assist the bureaus to build relationships with the communities after involving all of the stakeholders, community groups, city bureaus, and the community at large in the process of determining what works well for our communities. Will help bridge that gap that Commissioner Fish is talking about, people who don't have time to engage in the city process. When they're involved with helping identify what works well for them and what is successful for them in terms of becoming involved in our processes, then we have more of an ability to be more inclusive and equitable within our decision making. We will also continue to coordinate with Danielle Brooks and the Civil Rights Title VI work, but even though the two efforts are separate, they do help support a common cause. We will refine our recommendations and seek adoption by City Council, and then we will work with City Council to support implementation throughout the bureaus, developing processes down the line, perhaps a resource guidebook or a model that people can come to a central location to find out more information and ways to become involved in the city. In closing, I wanted to say that we have a lot of hard work ahead of us, and Portland has the potential. I have been at several different meetings over the last several months, and I've heard this mentioned in different arenas, that the city of Portland is known nationally for its urban planning and for our progressive ways, but wouldn't it be wonderful to be known for our inclusion and equity as a city? When we have equity, we have sustainability. We invite you to give us your thoughts and encourage everybody to fill out the survey that will be coming online next week. We will also have hard copies that will circulate into the community and to the non-geographical communities as well. Thank you.
A couple of thoughts and suggestions. One, I want to thank you for your work. I really appreciate it. And to follow up and amplify on Commissioner Fish's question, I really want you to dig in and find out who's attending, who's involved, and who's not involved. I need that baseline. Too many assumptions, I think, are made by all of us because we don't have that assumption. And then, obviously, I want to know who is realistic to get involved and who's not. Let's not waste our time on the percentage of the community for they're either not interested or or they're just not interested. I guess that would be it. Then within the percentage that are interested but not involved, then clearly, what are the sort of the means of what's realistic for them to be to go from not involved to involved? What's the means of that? And I'd really encourage you to spend quality time, and then obviously that gets into leads you right to how. I would rather have someone involved online than not involved at all, for example. But that's not the panacea. I think it's really important that your work start to interview city council members. We are a key customer, not the only customer, but a key customer. And I think that some of the public involvement work is additive to the trade-offs that we have to make, and some is not. And again, that shouldn't be the only determinant in your recommendations, but I actually think that, for example, this report comes to us, and I sought you guys out, but I don't know that you need to interview. You need to interview the council and the council staff to really understand what they need from this process. And it's really when the issues get contentious, the way that the city works now on its vulnerable days is the process comes to us and we agree or disagree. And if we disagree, it feels to the folks that have been involved with the process like it's a violation of the process. And And we need to make it really clear that we are part of the process. We, the City Council, are a key part of the process. And Commissioner Leonard over the years has made, I think, this, when there is disagreement on a policy or something, that the way we do our work right now makes those involved feel as if the process was bad if the City Council doesn't agree with the recommendations. Now, granted, we provide great weight to those recommendations, but sometimes there is a whole host of factors that might only be in the minds and the heads of the City Council. Or creating a process of public involvement where you get more of that sooner, perhaps, out of the minds of the City Council. Because I really would like to have people feel like their involvement, their investment of time is worth it, but not feel betrayed if it comes to decision makers and decision makers don't necessarily agree with everything. So those are the two points. One, figure out, really take the time, this is a great group, and take the time to really find out why people don't get involved. The other thing we're doing on the Portland plan, just in the short term, is we do demographic surveys at all of our meetings. So we know who's in the room and who's not in the room. And we educate folks in the room what the citywide or neighborhood demographic profile is compared to who's in the room. And what we have found is it makes folks in the room sort of broaden their thinking and be kind of automatic representatives of the people not in the room. So even though in the Portland plan, the vast majority, we mailed out to every household twice to get involved. The vast majority of people that showed up were white Caucasians, by far. Tended to be more affluent than the city, whiter than the city as a whole, more affluent as the city as a whole. But everyone in the room knew that because we asked with the clickers who was in the room and who wasn't. And again, because we mailed every household a couple times and people showed and didn't show, I'm really looking forward to your recommendations, especially around communities of color, how to get them more inclusive in whatever ways. And I know that showing up to a meeting isn't going to work for some folks. So what is our menu? What is our efforts based on your analysis for getting more people involved, especially communities of color and lower income people? Thank you.
So Mayor Adams, in fact, Linda and her group did meet with me very recently, and we had almost exactly this discussion in my office, which I greatly appreciated, not only for the candor, but the way you all received it and understood it. And so I think with Commissioner Fish's earlier question and then Mayor Adams' follow-up and our own conversation, I felt pretty good about the direction you were heading.
And I should clarify, I perhaps overlooked mentioning this, but as part of our community outreach in terms of sharing the principles and our kind of work plan, we are starting by interviewing the City Council members. We just haven't gotten to you yet, and also the Bureau Directors. And partly it's depending on people's schedules, and so we're trying to work our way through and cover everybody. And if you have other thoughts in addition of key staff, people that you're aware of, or other folks that you know out in the community that you'd want us to touch base with, we're glad to do that.
Random knocking on doors and asking people if they attend these things or not, and then spending time with the people that don't and find out why not. Great work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. And more invited testimony?
Yeah, that's right.
Anyone signed up to testify?
No one else signed up. Okay.
Commissioner Fritz?
So I move to accept the report.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to accept the report. Carla, can you please call the roll? Vote. Sorry.
I am the liaison to this committee. It is an inter-bureau, inter-community bureau, and I'm very happy with the work that you've been doing. And I want to, again, call out Afifa Ahmed Shafi. Thank you very much for your work. And also Polo Catalani, who is here from the Office of Human Relations, has been integral in making sure that we do think about who's not here. And so thank you for those of you who are here and for all of your good work. And I'm excited about this. It sounds like a lot of process, but as Linda said, it's not more process, it's better process. And it's figuring out how to come to consensus if possible. And then, as the mayor said, recognize that reasonable people can disagree and that there may be other considerations that the council has heard or is thinking about that the community maybe doesn't get all that information. So I'm very happy with the recommendation to include this, the public involvement report, in our data that we get on every single issue. I think that would be very helpful to me to know how a project was changed, whether there was any public involvement. And also the recommendation to make sure that each bureau does have a bureau advisory committee. And I know the PIAC has been monitoring the budget process and attending the different budget committees. In the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, which is a new bureau, we set out with the thought that our budget committee would turn into our bureau advisory committee. And so there have been a lot of folks engaged in the budget process. There's an opportunity right now for those bureaus who don't have public involvement committees and bureau advisory committees to ask some of the folks who've been most engaged in the budget to please continue on and help set the policies, help advise on policies and actions of the bureau throughout the year, which then will better inform the budget process next year. I believe we're making great progress. I want to recognize Mayor Potter for starting a lot of this work and thank my colleagues for being equally invested in it. Aye.
Fish.
Well, thank you for an outstanding report. And Amanda, thank you for your leadership on this. And what I would say to Linda is, in the course of your meetings and interviews, I think also to the extent you have some best practices or a short list of constructive suggestions, we'd be very receptive to them. In the rush of work, sometimes we have to prioritize things, and just hearing that there is a better way to do an outreach, there might be a pool of people we have overlooked we could add to our advisory board process, because we're always looking for new faces, or something that we could experiment with, we would welcome that as well. So thank you. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Excuse me. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, and thank you all for the committee for its good work. I really appreciate it. I think the discussion we had up here about how to get more people involved is an ongoing challenge, and it's an ongoing discussion, but I think there are ways that we can innovate and figure out how to get more people involved. One of the ideas I've suggested over the years, and I think some neighborhoods have done this, is to bring back the old idea of the welcome wagon. You know, back in like the 50s or 60s, when somebody moved into a neighborhood, somebody would show up at their doorstep and introduce themselves, provide a bag of goodies and things like that, local merchant coupons. And I think, you know, something like that, too, could be done today, too. When somebody moves into a neighborhood, you know, find out, somebody introduce themselves and let them know what neighborhood association they belong to, when it meets. And I'm sure local merchants would probably provide discount coupons for something like that, too. So I think that's a tool that I think should become more widespread, frankly. And I hope you'll take a look at that. So, but otherwise, I'm pleased to support this report. Aye.
Leonard?
I always valued a variety of aspects of opinion and input, and I always appreciate hearing from groups such as this that take a particular position. But one of the hardest things to explain for each of us up here to the folks that we represent is that we do represent the entire city, and as important as neighborhood associations are, whenever I make a decision, I also think about the single parent that gets up before dawn to get themselves ready for work, gets their kids up, fed, get them ready for school, get them to school, get to work, work all day, think about dinner that night, pick up the kids, get home, cook dinner, get the kids' homework done, get them ready for the next day, and about 8 o'clock at night, they might have an hour before they begin going to bed, preparing to do the same thing the next day. I never forget that, because I know a lot of people like that. And they're passionate about issues. They vote in every election. They don't have the time or the wherewithal to also become involved in their local neighborhood association. So it isn't as though I don't always respect that comes from organized neighborhood associations, but I think we have to balance a variety of interests in the city, including those who can't become involved. And when I met with Linda and the group in my office, I expressed that I know it's frustrating sometimes, just as the mayor articulated excellently a moment ago, for people who work on a particular issue, agree with an outcome, and then the council may take a different direction. And I probably painfully at times try to make clear that is an aspect of how we make decisions, but it is that. There is a larger picture that involves not just other people that aren't at the table, but other factors as well. And I think if we're clear with groups up front that are working with the city to influence what the city does, that is part of the process. And it is important, but it is an aspect of the process, and there are other aspects. People don't feel frustrated at the end of it that they weren't listened to. I also believe, and I've always lived by this motto, that reasonable people getting the same set of facts generally reach the same conclusion. And the tricky word in there is reasonable. So we have to be reasonable. The people that we're working with have to be reasonable. And if we are, which means being open to various aspects of an issue, different points of view, different ways of looking at things, we generally can get to the same place. And I've experienced that here a number of times as well on a number of issues. So I do appreciate this work and Commissioner Fritz's efforts in leading this group and the report that it produced, and look forward to working with you more in the future. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her great leadership with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and also this effort, and want to thank each of you for your work on this group. The figuring out who's not showing up and why, I think, has both demographic variables and also geographic variables and income, if I had to guess the three. And so how do we figure out how to effectively involve those folks? We've talked about it for years. I know there's a lot of academic research done on it, and if we've done it and I've missed it, then I look forward to getting it as soon as possible. I don't know that we've actually ever studied it, at least recently. So, and because half the city, you know, half of Portland is new since 1980 and a third of the geography is new, you know, I think it's time to sort of check in on that and create a baseline. I'd really appreciate it. In terms of the Bureau Advisory Committees, we've worked hard to include labor and management, outside experts, and then citizens. So to the degree that we can, as you described, sort of use that expertise on the budget, which is more than just how to spend money, it's sort of the work plan for the year. If people are willing to stay on, I think that would be really fruitful. So I look forward to meeting with you, and thank you for your great work. Appreciate it. Aye. All right. We now going to appoint. So it's item number 198.
Roll call.
Can you please read the title?
Okay, sure. 198. Appoint Mark Fetters, Donita Fry, Marty Stockton, Desiree Williams-Raji, Rick Nixon, and Allison Wisniewski to the Public Involvement Advisory Council.
Can you please call the vote?
Fritz.
Thank you all for serving, whether being reappointed or newly appointed. I greatly appreciate your service. Also thank Tim Crail and Dora Perry in my office who are passionate about this with me. Aye.
Fish.
We appreciate your service. Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you for your service. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Great group. Thanks for serving. Aye. 198 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, item number 220?
220 or 215?
215.
Which one, Mayor?
220. Should I skip a page? Sorry, I skipped a page. Wishful thinking on my part.
We'll get there.
All right, so let's do the pulled item 207.
207, amend contract with SAP Public Services, Inc. to provide additional post-go-live stabilization consulting services for $200,000 for city SAP Enterprise Resource Planning System implementation.
Commissioner Fritz.
So I asked for this item to be pulled because I asked the question in my office, got a really good answer, and I wanted Ken Russ to have the opportunity to explain what's happening here and that with the SAP, which is the, what's the acronym stand for SAP?
It's the systems applications product. It has a German flavor to it, but SAP is the word.
We all call it SAP. It's the new computer system, and I wanted the public to know what's happening with it. So if you wouldn't mind just telling us briefly what this is.
Certainly. For the record, I'm Ken Russ, the director of the Office of Management and Finance, and with me this morning is Bruce Tyre, who is the Enterprise Business Solution, or EBS as we refer to it, support manager. And Bruce may be familiar to you. He was the project manager for the EBS implementation, so he's been with the city for a number of years. I'm happy to have him now in the support manager role. The ordinance before you this morning is a contract amendment with SAP Public Services, and we've had SAP working with us for the last couple of years, and there have been several different amendments to the contract that we started with them back in May 2008. You'll recall at the time that we determined a need to switch vendors in terms of the integration consultant and move to SAP, and they've been with us through the successful go-live of the finance and logistic pieces in November of 2008. And then with the human capital management, HCM as we refer to it, which went live with the first paychecks cut in the system in July of 2009. The contract amendment for you in front of you this morning is for an additional $200,000, really for post-production, post-go-live related work on the HCM elements. We had anticipated that we would be able to handle that within the existing contract with SAP, but during the course of post-go-live, the security employee that we had that worked on security-related issues for the SAP application, it's an H-1B visa employee. They lost their status. We lost that employee. It's a very difficult position for us to fill, and so it took us several months to get a new employee on board. We had to rely on consultant services, which are expensive during that time period. That probably is about $160-some thousand of the $200,000 of additional work. And then we had a lot of effort at the year end with both service pack upgrades and just year-end related activity that were more time-consuming than we expected. But the resources in the current budget for the EBS project are sufficient to pay this contract amendment, and that is really what we're here for this morning.
Thank you very much.
Did you want to, since you're here, maybe update us on issues related to, particularly related to police payroll and proper recording of overtime payments when their shifts begin on a Saturday night and end on a Sunday morning, for instance? I know that's been a big concern to them, and have we fixed that now?
Well, I'll talk generally, then I'll let Bruce maybe talk more on some of the specifics. There have been, although we've cut now probably 125,000 paychecks out of the system, and by far the large majority of those are accurate. There have been some issues associated with pay. Some of those are data entry errors, and we had that with the old system as well. Some are interpretations of the time configuration that we have in the system, and some are some issues, I think, that have come up the way we've configured the system that we believe we need to change. I think that the start time issue is one of those, and so those are things that we're aware of that we're working on. I'll let Bruce talk more specifically about that.
That is a configuration we know we have to change then.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. For the record, I'm Bruce Tyre. I'm the SAP support manager. Pleasure to be with you this morning. We're on an ongoing basis. We're working directly with the police, with the physical team there to make sure that we understand what their issues are and solve those in the system. And then also work with the users, both our timekeepers and our, to understand how to use the system effectively. So we're ongoing working with them to resolve the problems for each individual employee in the city.
How long will it take before we actually have the reconfiguration part of the problem fixed?
We're on an ongoing basis looking at each one of them. It's a pretty complex thing with each one of the different variables that can occur with each employee when they start their shift, when they end, and the different premiums that may apply. We look at each one of those individually and address them. So it's an ongoing basis. We think we're fairly close at this point, but we still have some open issues.
Well, one of the things we're also doing is that the pay advice that currently is produced out of the system doesn't have enough granularity on the overtime detail, so it makes it difficult for an employee that has different wage types for overtime to understand the roll-up amount, and so we're redesigning that remittance. We hope to have that done within the next month. We think that that will help a lot in terms of explaining to people how the overtime pay was calculated and give them higher confidence in the numbers that they're seeing.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion from council? Thank you, gentlemen. This is an emergency ordinance. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. That gets us to 110. It doesn't say when the regular agenda starts.
216.
I need more coffee. Thank you. It takes a whole village. Can you please read the title and call the vote on second reading, item number 215?
Strengthen invasive plant management by adopting the Invasive Plant Policy Review and Regulatory Improvement Project Report. Fritz?
I am very pleased to support this, and I again thank Tricia Sears, Roberta Jortner, Jennifer Goodrich, who are some of the key staff. There are many, many staff who are involved in this, community members, and I'm looking forward to the outreach and education work to let Portland citizens know which 15 plants are now required to be removed from your property and what they look like. I personally need that education, so I'm very much looking forward to it. I hope I don't have any of them. Aye.
Fish.
In addition to the people Commissioner Fritz has identified, I want to thank Astri Dragoy and Kathleen Murin from Parks that participated in this. I want to acknowledge that the Greater Green partnership was launched under then-Commissioner Adams, and we are very proud of Parks to be a full partner in that through Protect the Best. We have been very successful in tackling invasive species throughout the city, including one of our biggest problem areas, which is Forest Park. And this is a wonderful partnership. And we are at Parks looking forward to helping to get the word out about the kinds of invasive plants that people should not buy or plant, and so that we help with the education and outreach component. And this is really terrific work. Congratulations to all. Aye.
Seltzman?
Well, I want to echo those accolades. This is a great, great work. And I just wanted to acknowledge Mayor Adams for his leadership in this, but also the Bureau of Environmental Services staff who played a large role in this, and that's Mike Rosen, Paul Ketchum, and Jennifer Goodrich. So I wanted to acknowledge their contributions, but it's a great, great report and a great guide to how we can reduce and get rid of invasive species. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
When we did the city's first invasive species summit up at the zoo in 2005, there was a lot of efforts across the region that well-intentioned but hadn't been pulled together in a strategy. And so this does that and much more. I want to thank the entire team involved, Tricia, Jennifer, but also Maria T. Mai and my commissioner's office staff, now Lisa Libby, and the planning and sustainability team, and also acknowledge, as Commissioner Fritz did in our earlier hearing, the great community leadership of Sandy Dietrich. So we had great passion from her. Please to vote aye. Please read the title for second reading, item number 216.
Accept donation of solar-powered compacting trash cans from the Lloyd District Transportation Management Association.
Please call the vote.
Fritz.
Thank you to the Lloyd District Transportation Management Association for this generous gift. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Saves money, saves the planet. Thank you for the donation. Aye. 216 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, contract amendment, item number 217.
Amend legal services agreement with Ball Janik LLP for outside counsel. Fritz?
Thanks.
This was work that needed to be done. The funding for it comes from the Spectator Fund, and I think that the contract language was as tight as could be. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 217 is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for second reading, item number 218.
Authorize Lentz Town Center Urban Renewal and Redevelopment Bonds. Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
I just want to note that major council-approved capital improvement programs, which will be funded through these bond proceeds, include multifamily rental housing, single-family home repair, single-family home buyer assistance projects, public parks improvements, and many other worthy projects. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Item number 218 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 219?
Approve settlement of claims with McLeod USA Telecommunications Services, Inc.
Commissioner Fritz.
It is absolutely my pleasure to introduce this item to request council approval for an audit settlement in the amount of approximately $1.6 million with McLeod USA, a telecommunications company doing business in the city of Portland. This is unexpected revenue for the city's general fund. And I extend a special thanks to staff and the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management and the City Attorney's Office for their great work, once again, in looking out for the citizens of Portland. Through settlements like this, we ensure that the city and our citizens are properly compensated for private use of public property. In this way, the in this case, the telecommunications company is using the streets of our city for their fiber optic cables. With the recent XO and Time Warner settlements, the unbudgeted general fund revenue coming into the city through the efforts of the cable office and city attorney staff now totals just over $4.6 million in this fiscal year alone. $4.6 million extra revenue. Thank you very much. Congratulations to all who have pulled this together and to the citizens of Portland who benefit. And I ask that the council approve this settlement. Mary Beth Henry and David Solos are here. Do you have a presentation? From the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management, this is our deputy director.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Thank you for those kind words, Commissioner Fritz. We, too, are very pleased with the settlement, and I want to thank this council and your predecessors for investing resources in our office so that those resources and that investment continue to pay off time after time. The story really began in 2000 when we negotiated the original franchise. And that was a joint effort between our office and the city attorney's office. In order for staff to be successful in an audit or a lawsuit, we need to have a very sound, defensible franchise to begin with. That's the starting point. The next step is to invest resources in compliance efforts, both staffing and auditing funds. Our goal is to have all the companies pay everything they owe us from the beginning. But that is our goal, and that's a perfect world, and we don't live in that perfect world. I do want to point out, though, that most companies do pay according to the franchise and are good corporate citizens. I'd like to recognize Ben Walters, who worked with me on negotiating the original franchise. And I'd also want to recognize the persistent compliance efforts of Dave Solis and the dogged determination of Terry Thatcher in the city attorney's office. They are ensuring that these companies that are profiting from the private use of the public right-of-way pay fair compensation for that use. And I'd like to ask council to support us in our efforts to tell the Federal Communications Commission, who is currently looking at preempting these kinds of franchise fees, I'm asking for your help in telling the FCC to keep their hands off our local franchise fees, and to seek help from our congressional delegation as well. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Have we had the vehicle yet to express our concerns to the FCC?
We're working with the national organizations to put together a huge advocacy effort, including letters from mayors across the country. And any time elected officials are visiting Washington, D.C., we are setting up meetings with them and the FCC. Right now in the National Broadband Plan, staff has inserted language that would, in effect, preempt telecommunications franchise fees.
Do we have a champion in our own delegation, the Oregon delegation?
We're talking both, working with Dan Bates and talking with both our senators and Congressman Wu and Blumenauer.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone wish to testify on this item? Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fritz?
Well, again, thank you very much to staff. And when we bought the previous settlement, I wore my center's helper elf hat. I'm just wearing my Valentine's Day red today because it's certainly a gift of love to the city that you work so diligently, way above and beyond the call of duty, and you do it, and all this money goes into the general fund. And so I do thank my colleagues for funding our administrative assistant that helps provide support for this diligent work. And I'm very happy to be able to ask you to accept this settlement. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thanks to both the cable office and to city attorney's office for doing great work and bringing us more revenue that we are owed. So good work. Aye.
Leonard.
And thank you, Mary Beth, and everybody that works with you. Appreciate it. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you for your good work, and Commissioner Fritz, thank you for pledging that money to housing. Aye.
Adams.
Well, great work in the Office of Cable and Franchise Management. Terry and our legal team, thanks for your great work as well. Thank you for pledging that money to the City of, sorry, the City Transportation Bureau. Aye.
$65,000 of it, that's good.
All right. Now that we've carved up the spoils, can you please read the title and call the vote on item number, second reading item number 220.
Approve agreement to initiate process for a land exchange with the Mount Hood National Forest to exchange selected lands within the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit.
Can we read 221 at the same time?
221. Establish watershed protection policies for city-owned lands in the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit.
Please call the vote.
Can I ask so a before question? We call the vote, oh. I want to. Commissioner Saltzman have a question? Please take one and pass it.
Yeah, I did want to ask a question.
Yeah. Is it two different things?
Yeah.
Is when discussion is allowed on second readings, or is it vote only, or?
We've discussed before during second readings.
Okay. Why don't we just suspend the rules if that's a question? So we can
we'll suspend the rules unless there's objections. Commissioner Leonard.
Well, I would like to hear Commissioner Saltzman's question first.
And I apologize that I wasn't here last week during the first reading, but I am looking at the section of the agreement about enforcement, and it talks about the Portland Water Bureau may appoint Water Bureau employees as closure area enforcement officers provided for in ORS 448.315. And I want to know, are these is that the same section of ORS that allows law enforcement unit to be created?
Let me answer that, David. I've met with each of the council members individually on the topic of the issue of having Water Bureau Security BPSST certified. In each of my meetings with you one-on-one and publicly and with the press, I have said under current law, the commissioner in charge of the Water Bureau has the authority to have Water Bureau Security armed without council approval and to have certain authority under the statute that does not require council approval. ORS 448.315 says, the mayor or authorities having control of the community water supply system supplying the city may appoint special police officers who, after taking oath, shall have the powers of constables to may arrest with or without warrant any person committing within territory described in ORS 448.295, which is the water system, any offense against the purity of the domestic water supply source or the community water supply system under state law, and so on. That is existing current law in the statute I have referred to repeatedly in the other discussion we've had regarding Water Bureau Security and being BPSST certified. This statute does not make Water Bureau Security BPSST certified. Is it existing law? It's the same law that existed when you were head of the Water Bureau and changes nothing in that other debate.
Okay. Thank you.
Other discussion?
Yes. So I've passed out a map because the misinformation that has gone out in the last week has been disappointing on this issue. And the part that's disappointing is the misinformation has been promulgated by people who know better, who ironically have been part of our public process for the past 2 years sitting at the table, including Oregon Wild, and including Friends of the Reservoir. This current agreement and the next ordinance that we're going to vote on, in fact, reflects their input over the last 2 years. Second, I want to remind the council, this is the initiation of a process to exchange land that will take up to 2012 or so to conclude that includes a public process, in addition to the public process we have had already. Three, the part that has been difficult for me to understand is the position taken by some that if, in fact, in 2013, after a public process, the city and the federal government agree to a land exchange, somehow there would be more vulnerability to the forest that surrounds Bull Run to being clear cut than what it is currently. And let me point out two things that I think should clear that up for the council. One, the second item we're going to vote on is an exact replication of the federal statute in terms of prohibition to cut on federal lands. We're going to adopt that for the city lands. Two, if you look at the first page of your map, you will see the current ownership. The current ownership is green, owned by the federal government. The light blue is the current ownership by the city of Portland. The irony of the argument that we've all been getting is that those lands that are currently under city ownership are in the middle of old growth and spotted owl habitat. What we're proposing to change is that land that is currently old growth and spotted owl habitat, that if we exchange the land, will come under the federal protections that the advocates claim they want. And if you flip the page, what will end up happening is those areas that now don't have federal protection, that are owned by the city, that are old growth and spotted owl habitat, will go to the federal government. The light blue that you see on the second page will be city ownership, that some of which the city currently owns, some of which the federal government currently owns. Those lands that are in light blue that we would get if this process concludes have been already cut for the reservoir. Most of that land that is owned by the federal government, in fact, that we would get in exchange is currently underwater. What we are trying to do is actually have a management area completely owned by the city of Portland that avoids us going through, as the superintendent of the Mount Hood National Forest testified last week on our behalf. He's a federal government employee. What he's trying to have us avoid doing is going through federal processes that, according to his own testimony, waste his staff time, waste the city hundreds of thousands of dollars in permit fees to manage lands that are contiguous to the Bull Run reservoirs when we need to do some repair, when we need to do some improvements. So to say that I'm disappointed in some of what I've read in the last week is an understatement, because what we're actually proposing to do strengthens the protections of old growth forests, spotted owl habitat, and if there's any doubt that the lands we inherit will be protected, we have, at the request of the Friends of the Reservoir and at the request of Oregon Wild, adopted in the second resolution we're going to vote on here today, the language from federal law that gives us the same level of protection for the lands that we would inherit from the federal government.
Just one question, Commissioner Leonard.
Yes.
With respect to the second matter we're going to take up.
Yes.
In light of the fact that all we're doing, all you're asking for us today is to initiate a process, which will take some time. And do I understand correctly that if at some point in the future you determined that the watershed protection policies need to be modified in any way, we would have the chance to revisit that before they were applicable to the land that we're talking about?
Well, and beyond that, the council has to vote ultimately on any agreement that we reach.
Thank you.
Let me be very clear. I completely agree with you on the logging. I have no worries at all that what you're proposing is going to make any changes in the timber harvesting potential. In fact, I think that it makes it much more certain, and I support that, and I thank you for doing that. My concern is about if the land around the reservoirs becomes city property, what any development on city property, the process that it would have to go through. And I was told when I asked this question last week that it would be the Clackamas County Code. And the only thing in the Clackamas County Code that would regulate the development is it's a conditional use. And the only approval criterion that would apply is that the proposed use shall not significantly increase fire hazard, fire suppression risks, or risks to fire suppression personnel. There is no environmental zone in this area. There's nothing. We have less protection in the Bull Run watershed than we have in the Balch Creek watershed as far as what kind of development, what mitigation, are there setbacks? Do we have to replant the disturbance area? I'm very concerned. Whereas if we were going through the NEPA process, the National Environmental Protection Act process, that does have to be looked at in terms, and there does have to be a public process to require consideration of the environmental impacts and the necessary mitigation. So that's where I'm hung up on this.
David, would you like to respond to that?
Well, two things. Some of our property is in Multnomah County, some of it's in Clackamas County, so we've looked at both codes. The lands that we own currently, we manage without the NEPA process, without the land use protections that we're proposing. Nothing that we are looking at would change that. We're saying we would apply that ability to the lands that we would obtain in an exchange. So you're right, Commissioner, the lands that we currently own are not protected under NEPA. Frankly, those are the lands that would probably benefit most from being currently protected under NEPA, because those are the spotted owl old growth habitat. What I would challenge the council to do is to look at any project we've done since 1990 when we've stopped logging and say, where has there been a project that has caused some damage or that has been controversial, that has caused harm? I think the issue is one of trust with the community.
It's trust and verify, and the challenge is that the public is not allowed into the Bull Run watershed. Well, so we rely on our citizens in the environmental zones in Portland to tell us when things are happening that need some inspection or some enforcement. There's no public process to look at is development in the Bull Run watershed, proposed development. I'm not talking just
there
now.
Is, though, Commissioner.
What?
We identify months ahead of time that we are considering doing something up in the watershed, whether it's a study of some natural resource or whether there is some sort of proposed development. And we post that on our website, and we have conversations with our stakeholders and the public, and the public does go into the watershed under our supervision. And if somebody wanted to say, I want to go see exactly what you are doing with Dam 1 or at Headworks or at Bear Creek House, we would be happy to accommodate that.
And the irony of this argument is, and I apologize if I sound a little exasperated, but at times it feels like, I mean, this is set up to have a certain outcome, is that when I got the water bill, I initiated a public outreach program with Portland Public Schools, with Portland State University, with the community colleges, and have notified a variety of interest groups, including the Water Bureau purchasing a tour bus to give guided tours on a regular scheduled basis, twice a week at least during the spring and the summer and the fall, to get citizens up into the Bull Run watershed and not just sit in the bus, but to get out and look at it, to become educated as to what it is, to become advocates for it in the future if anybody ever intends to do any kind of development in there. So we built up an awareness amongst the citizenry, and I don't think even Oregon Wild could. In fact, they have opposed the efforts that I've made to increase citizen tours in the watershed on the basis of they are fearful that that will cause some contamination. The position we've taken now, ironically, on the other side is that's what builds an informed citizenry. Get them in the watershed, look at it. They will never allow the kind of development that they say they fear. But the bigger point here is beyond whether you believe me or not, or you suspect the Water Bureau of some nefarious kind of activity up there, is the lands that we own currently are in the middle of old growth and spotted owl habitat. So if you had fears at all that there is some lack of protection to the watershed, you would want to vote for this only because we're giving that land to the federal government in exchange for land around the reservoirs that has already been the timber been cut, and most of which is underwater. So I just fail to really understand the reasoning behind not supporting at least. And again, this starts a conversation. This doesn't make the decision to exchange the land. It initiates a conversation. And anybody that has any concerns during that conversation, they will be listened to. They will be taken into account, just as this current ordinance takes into account the last 2 years of conversations.
Can I clarify something? So the land, parcels of land moving from federal ownership to city ownership, will be managed will be managed in a way that has to be approved, and any changes that are contemplated will have to be considered and approved by the City Council.
That's correct, Commissioner, Mayor. We will, any work that we do, any development that we would do, comes to you in a variety of ways, either through our budget process or through contracts for work that gets done, hiring of consultants, any of that work we come to you on.
I would just say that part of the legislative intent that as we move along with this can be clarified as you get into it, of course, is that whatever the federal versus city protections are, obviously with change of ownership, that changes. It remains in our hands how this resource-owned area will be managed. And it can't happen without the City Council's approval.
And the jurisdiction within which the project occurs, if it's Clackamas County, it's Clackamas County. If it's Multnomah County, it's Multnomah County.
Can Clackamas County, without our permission, do anything to land which we own?
No,
Commissioner. They would. We have to get permits, building permits, from Clackamas or Multnomah County. But if I was building something in the watershed, I would, one, have to come to you to get that authority and permission. And, of course, that would be something that we would have gone through this notification process probably months or years before then. The community that's most interested, the stakeholders that we deal with, will know probably before you do that we are involved in doing something or proposing something or planning something.
I'm really glad that you brought up the issue of contracts and budgets coming to council, because I found it impossible to tell, and I have to trust, and I do trust, that you have done a good job in getting the right consultant, in planning the project. I get the contract with a dollar figure is what I get to discuss. There's no process like the environmental review on a project that would happen, as I say, in the Balch Creek watershed, that I would get. There would be an appeal where citizens would be able to say, no, don't put the pipe in this way, put it in that way. There's no way that I can tell whether what you're doing in the watershed is the right thing to do. And so let me say again, Commissioner Leonard, I am not in the least concerned that either the city or the federal government is going to log the spotted owl habitat. That's not what I'm worried about. What I'm concerned about and have been frustrated about over the past year in looking at these contracts is I can't tell what is being done. And I think that in this most precious resource, we should have at least the same protections as we have inside the city for our environmental resources, which has already been damaged. I'm further concerned that in authorizing the first continuing conversation, we're authorizing an exchange of money from $290,000 to $494,000. That's a lot of money. So I'd like to be assured first. Before I say that, yes, I can support doing that, I'd like to know that at the end of the process, I can get to the point where I am confident that the citizen involvement, the environmental protections for our land that we will newly own in the Bull Run watershed has at least the same protections as it would if it was in the city.
And if I could interpret your using the word protections and what you referred to, so let me clarify, is the environmental impact analysis.
The environmental impact analysis.
You've also said that you don't question the intent to have just as much protections, and then you said what you think is lacking is sort of the environmental impact.
It's the environmental impact statement, which is the key thing that happens in the NEPA process and which I'm reluctant to give up, even though I recognize it's long and too convoluted and probably doesn't address the right things that we want to serve anyway. I want to, because I've been in situations where in environmental zones in the city, the staff has had a proposal or the applicant, the consultant has a proposal. Citizens come in and look at the approval criteria, the standards, and say, if you did it this way, there would be less impact. And everybody has said, oh, good suggestion. Now, I know that the projects and the scale and the ability for citizens to get in there and understand what's going on is different. And that actually gives me more concern that we should have more eyes and more process to be able to have citizens review and have standards so that at the very least we know when a contract comes through that you've looked at the setback from the water, that you've looked at how the disturbance area is replanted. Maybe have those policies already.
Let me just respond to that. So we had a representative of the federal government here last week that is charged with the protection of these lands that said, in his opinion, and those that he works with, including NEPA, thinks that this is a redundant process that the city goes through, that wastes the federal government's time, that wastes money for the